Velikara, Shaw, Jerry Adams, Arish, August Morris Gra, Tasula Gomsa, Goel Shevsha, Gohun Tucker Fad. So, 24 years ago, I wrote a short piece for a magazine called Antrim 2000. And just this week, I discovered it when I was clearing out three decades of accumulated books and newspapers and clippings and assorted pamphlets. And since that time, 2000, much has changed in the Gaeldom. The most important change is probably the growth of women's football. Until recent times, women were confined to camogie, maybe a bit of handball, but mostly camogie. And now women's football is the fastest growing Gaelic game. So I look forward to the outworkings of the Steering Committee for Integration, chaired by Mary McAleese. And 2027 has been revealed as the year that the GAA and Common Law Class Gael and Board Camogie Act, the Camogie Association and the Ladies Football, Gaelic Football Association, will come together as one. Now, more does need to be done in the meantime to give women Gaels parity with their male contemporaries. 2007 will also see the emergence of the new Casement Stadium, another positive. Among the changes that have happened in the 24 years since I wrote the original article has been the improvement in television coverage. And many work has been done by pundits, including some great podcasts and local print media columns. The BBC has a public service, as a public service, has more to do to bring in parity with other sports. For example, you know, some county hurling or football finals have capacity attendance, and that needs to be reflected in coverage. And the RTE blockage of Northern access to some fixtures is downright insulting. And so too with the lack of local council playing facilities. So there's more to be done by all concerned. In Belfast, hurling remains under pressure. Country clubs continue to stay ahead of city hurlers, and that's to their credit. And this is despite the many work of Gaels at all levels of the association in Belfast. Local clubs and their legions of voluntary helpers, committees, players, coaches, mentors, fundraisers and supporters remain the backbone of the Gaeldom across the county, the nation and the diaspora. And our county boards do mighty work. So do local schools, including College de Firsta, which is progressing nicely. Connections between clubs, schools and counties will pay dividend in developing our player base, particularly in County Antrim. We're so lucky to have such a living, popular tradition. Friday night, week ago, the Late Late Show had a great celebration of the popular tradition that is Gaelic games, and a fitting testimony to and common law class Gael, which is much more, and this was underpinning the entire programme, which is much more than a sporting organisation. It's a family. It's us at our best. There was a time when Irish culture, including our games, was banned. In our own time, carrying a hurling stick in Belfast was illegal. So the last 25 years of Gaelic games have been amazing. We can look forward to the next 25 years with great confidence. Anyway, here's the piece from 2000. It's titled The Glory of Gaelic Games. My first love is hurling. That includes camogie. Although there are those who will argue that the camogues play a different game, I think they play a better game. Then comes football, which is mainly a kind of sport to keep hurlers fit. Handball is much underrated, and I'm too much out of condition now to even think of competing, though I know some aged Belfast men who are still up to championship standards. Recently I was told, though I can't vouch for this, that rounders is also a Gaelic game. I actually can confirm this, but perhaps some of your readers could let us know if and where Rounders is still being played. It is one of our Gaelic games. So what does all this mean? How important are Gaelic games? What part do they play in our lives? To suggest that one particular sport is better than another simply because it's a native game borders on xenophobia. So Gaelic games are not necessarily better than other games simply because they're Gaelic. They're better simply because they're better. Soccer, well, there are moments in soccer and there are stars. I always like to watch Pelé at his best, or the Sean Keynes of this world and Geordie Best. And when I was a child, Harry Gregg was one of the heroes. But it is, these days, a pedestrian sport. It's hyped by big money. It's more entertainment than athleticism. An odd time you might see a good match. But to play for whatever length of time they play, to a draw. Now rugby I've come to like more. In fact, rugby is an astonishing game. And I wouldn't mind getting to know more about and learn the rules about it. Croquet, tennis, ice skating, they're all okay as far as they go. But they're not exactly team sports. Golfing is less elitist than it used to be. I hear that Brian McFaul, incidentally, has started golfing. I presume that even bad hurlers could be good golfers, and that a half-decent hurler would be a great golfer. Tiger Woods' people came from Dunloy. So there's merit in all sport, and I can't think of one that it would be against. Not on principle anyway, although poorly managed boxers battering each other's brains out has never appealed to me. At the same time, Muhammad Ali is one of my sporting heroes. Him and Sambo McNaughton. Cricket is popular in Derry City. The least said about that, the better. It just goes to show that everyone has their own taste, and that's how it should be. But Gaelic games are special not only because of their skills, the degree of athleticism, teamwork and sheer commitment involved. In this context, even a sceptic would concede that they compare favourably with any other sport, and a neutral would agree that they outclass all alternatives. I know other ball players who have been amazed at how far and how accurately a senior footballer can kick a dead ball, and hurling still bewilders visitors from other disciplines. But Gaelic games are special because they're firmly rooted in local communities and open to all who support the Gaelic code. They bring drama, excitement, crack and huge enjoyment in players and spectators alike, because everyone can be an expert, because they're part of what we are, uniquely Irish. No better on that basis than anyone else, but special nonetheless. I just realised that when I was reading out the piece that I wrote 24 years ago, that I started to change bits of it, for example, including Bran McFaul. So, of course, Bran was only a baby 24 years ago. Now, to a more serious topic. We're into just 6 months this week since the attack by Hamas on southern Israel, and the Israeli state's vengeful genocidal response to that. Now, October the 7th was wrong, but October the 7th didn't happen in a vacuum. Since 1948, when Palestine was forcibly partitioned and 750,000 Palestinians were forced to flee their homes, the Israeli state has further occupied the West Bank, for a time the Gaza Strip, built illegal settlements on Palestinian land and imposed a brutal apartheid regime. 6 months on, almost 35,000 Palestinians, including 15,000 children, have been killed by Israeli bombs and snipers, and now by starvation. Scores of UN aid workers and now several foreign aid workers have been targeted and killed. These actions have increased the concern that's out there that Netanyahu is trying to provoke a wider war to bolster his own position, which is under increasing pressure within Israel and internationally. So what can we do? Increase the lobbying of the Irish government and our new Taoiseach to take firm action. Continue to demand an immediate ceasefire, the release of all hostages, Israeli and Palestinian. An end to the genocide, humanitarian aid for Gaza, the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, displaced Palestinians to be able to return home, and the lifting of the illegal blockade of Gaza. Let's not forget. Let's keep talking, writing, raising, and demanding an end to the genocide. The Good Friday Agreement was 26 years old on Wednesday, April the 10th. And for almost all of that time, Abdullah Öcalan, a founder of the Kurdish Workers' Party, has been in prison in Turkey. There's a mural tribute to Abdullah on the International Wall in Northumberland Street on the Falls Road up Divis Street. And April the 4th was his 75th birthday. Held in solitary confinement for years, denied family visits for much of that time, he has nonetheless become a voice for peace, and a leader willing to offer the hand of friendship to enemies. Now, there are ways of resolving long-standing differences. It takes patience, it takes leadership, and Abdullah has demonstrated that leadership. Despite his treatment, despite his incarceration, almost just a quarter of a century, he's forged a roadmap to peace that commits the Kurdish people to democracy and freedom and tolerance. He has said it's time to silence the weapons and let the ideas and the politics speak. Abdullah wants a new beginning that will bring the Kurdish people's struggle into a new phase in which they can, through negotiation, create an equal, free and democratic country for all people and all cultures. So I wish Abdullah a happy belated birthday. I commend him for his leadership and vision, and I urge the Turkish government to release him. And I'm going to finish as I ended. Mr. McCauley, my leader, found a little poem that I wrote. It's called Hurling. And that's the coup shouting. Antrim and Cucullin mode cheers me up on the long road home. Hurling is a victor. Losing is no shame. The joy is in playing the warrior's game. Sinead Carja, Mila Buehas, Muriantal Livsha. I'm going to let the dog out.